Friday with Rolf and Luke. Presented by 72 Sold. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
I was looking at the Pro Football Focus numbers of Minnesota's first game. Because I do think most Cardinals fans are looking forward to this game for a lot of reasons, but somewhere on the list, depending how you felt about Patrick Peterson the last couple years, somewhere on the list is you want to see DeAndre Hopkins just torch Patrick Peterson all day, which may very well happen. But Pro Football Focus, when they were going through grading all the corners around the NFL in week one, they said, quote, it was Bashaud Breeland, not Peterson, who struggled in Minnesota's opener against Cincinnati. Peterson allowed only 13 yards into his coverage compared to 107 for Breeland. So at least based on week one, I think we all saw the play where Peterson gave up the yards because it was right at the end of the game. But it doesn't sound, it doesn't seem like he had that bad of a game.
Yeah, you know what? He's not that bad of a player. He's a good player, in my opinion, especially when he's focused. And I think he's hit the reset button with the Minnesota Vikings. And I would expect Pat P. to come into State Farm Stadium ready to play. The attention has always been a problem with Patrick Peterson. It's always been a problem. When he's focused, when he's locked in, when the concentration is there, I think Pat P. is still capable of going out and playing extremely well. Will he do that on Sunday against DeAndre Hopkins? Because if I am Mike Zimmer, and Mike Zimmer has gone on record as saying Pat P. is his best corner, especially coming off the game Bashaud Breeland had, I'm putting Patrick Peterson over DeAndre Hopkins, and he's going to ghost DeAndre Hopkins.
See, I don't disagree with what you're saying about Peterson in the sense that any given week I could see him still having it and still looking really good any given week. If he's dialed in, he is still a good corner in any given week. I don't know if he can do it over the course of the full season and do it consistently, but the other thing is I don't see anybody stopping DeAndre Hopkins right now. And so that's a tough spot if you're Patrick Peterson. You're like, okay, I want to come here. I want to show my old fans, my old teammates. What are you going to do, cover DeAndre Hopkins to do it?
Well, now we're talking about to what degree is he going to play well or not play well.
Yeah.
That's the question that you're bringing up right here. Listen, is he going to shut out DeAndre Hopkins like he used to shut out Julio Jones back when they – no, that's not going to happen. And I'm saying Julio Jones back when Pappy was younger. Much younger, as a matter of fact, maybe about 6 years ago when they would play against the Atlanta Falcons and he'd shut them down, a young Julio Jones as well at that point in time. Yes, but Pat P used to shut down some of the best receivers in the National Football League. That's not what I'm talking about. But going out and playing well for the Minnesota Vikings and doing a good job on DeAndre Hopkins, yeah, I could see that happening.
He spoke yesterday. It's weird to hear Patrick Peterson talk when it's not on his All Things Covered podcast, but he spoke to the media yesterday, and they asked him, look, is this going to be difficult for you to just do what everybody says and treat it like it's just another game?
No, not at all, because naturality, it is another game. I have to go out there and be at my best for my team. I have to go out there and be dialed in for 60 minutes, not allowing any big plays, not allowing catches, doing whatever I need to do to make sure, my guy don't show up on the stat sheet. You know, so that's my main focus. That's my main goal going into this week. And I'm working towards that all week this week.
Boy, that is tough right there when you're talking about the Arizona Cardinals and what they put down on tape last week with DeAndre Hopkins in particular.
Yeah.
With Christian Kirk as well, knowing that A.J. Green is a guy that still is capable. And hopefully this is a game that I'm looking at A.J. Green. I got to tell you right now, the Tennessee game, he didn't have my attention. He did make a couple of catches. Didn't have a huge impact on the game, but going back and looking at the tape as well, man, there were just other guys that were torching the secondary of the Titans, and Christian Kirk in particular was one of those guys, and Kyler Murray recognized that early on.
Yeah, I do wonder with the balanced attack that we saw in week one, if they can maintain that over the course of the season. Are there just going to be weeks where we're like, hey, you know, so-and-so played well, but it just wasn't his week to produce because there's only so many yards to go around. And you figure Hopkins is always going to produce. So is it going to be Rondale Moore, A.J. Green, Christian Kirk? is one of them going to kind of have a quieter week each week? Because they won that game by 25.
You know what's interesting about that? Mike Zimmer is an old school guy. He's a guy that we love. We call him the Hydra. When I talk to my older brother Craig, we're talking about Mike Zimmer when we talk about the Hydra, because he's the multi-headed monster. He truly is a legend, I think, in the National Football League, or should I say we think, and my family in the National Football League, because of all the things that he's put together, including the blitz bail defense that everybody in the league runs. Everybody on third and obvious pass situation. Thank you very much, Mike Zimmer, all the way back when he was a defensive coordinator with the Cincinnati Bengals. The guy is a rare defensive mind. And you know right now, man, that is going to be something that I don't think he's going to move Pat P. I oscillate back and forth between, well, listen, if Mike Zimmer said Pat P by far and away is their best corner, why wouldn't he shadow D-Hop? Why wouldn't
makes
he
sense.
Do that?
Yeah.
It makes sense. Unless you're Mike Zimmer. See, that's the wild card.
A subterfuge.
There it is. The wild card of that. Move him around. Give him a bunch of different looks. That's who he is more than anybody else. Yet at the same time, I keep finding myself with the reality. Well, are you going to put Braylon
on DeAndre
Hopkins?
That's the next question, yeah.
Is that what you're going to do every play? Because they're going to know where Bashaud Breeland is going to line up. If you're going to leave Pat P on the right side of the field or the left side of the field, if you're going to do that, hey, maybe they could actually get the matchup they want by moving DeAndre Hopkins, unless you shadow him. That's going to be fascinating. And the first quarter, Luke, check that out. Write that down as one of the things we all need to look at going into that first quarter. Does Pat P shadow D-Hop?
It's actually already written down. Look at that.
Bing.
It's if Zimmer had more talented players, I don't mean like individually, but like collectively, if he had more talented pieces on his defense to work with, I think this would be a scarier matchup, because you're right. It makes a lot of sense to be like, yeah, we're going to put Peterson on Hopkins all week. And then when the game rolls around, yeah, you think Peterson's on Hopkins, but we're actually going to our other corner or this guy or that guy. But you just said it right there. If they want to put Bashaud Breeland on DeAndre Hopkins just to kind of mix things up, go ahead.
Yeah.
Hopkins is going to have 150 yards.
Man.
More from Patrick Peterson. Is there an advantage for you or the wide receivers in Arizona, because a lot of you guys know each other?
At the end of the day, when you get out on the ball, on the football field, you know, we're just being ballers, you know. They have a lot of great receivers on that roster this year. Obviously, D Hop is leading the way. AJ Green has been an 11-year vet in this league. My draft mate, Christian Kirk, had a great game last week. You know, but at the end of the day, every defense has an assignment and a responsibility. You know, if we're able to do that to our full potential, you know, we'll be able to make it out of downs.
There's one more here too before we hit the break. This is Peterson when he was asked the question you would expect. Do you anticipate a positive reaction when you come back to Arizona?
I'm not expecting anything. You know, if it comes, you know, I would definitely welcome it. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a week two game that I'm trying to prepare for and help my guys be in the best position possible to go out there and get the dub.
Man, that is a great answer right there. Well played, Pat P. Once again, love this guy. He's done so much charitable work here in the basin, of course, and a guy that absolutely – I don't want to build it up too much. I really don't, but I think of Pat P so much of the time when I think of the Arizona Cardinals and Bruce Arians and what happened under Bruce Arians and how good they were under Bruce Arians. I think of Pat P, one of the first guys. Larry Fitzgerald is a guy that I think of. Carson Palmer and Pat P.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Like I said, it's tough to, in the moment right now, separate the last couple years, but big picture, as we get further from it, you're going to look back on Patrick Peterson, regardless of what he does in Minnesota or anywhere else he may go at the end of the season. 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to look back on Patrick Peterson as one of the best Cardinals ever since they moved to Arizona. It just maybe doesn't feel that way right now, and it certainly doesn't need to feel that way for very long on Sunday.
Certainly isn't that way on Twitter.
No, nothing's ever that way on Twitter.
Right.
Coming up, how different are the Cardinals this season? We'll discuss it next. It's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Wolf. Wolf and Luke.
Let's go!
Presented by 72 Sold, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Did you hear the sound of that tackle right there? Did you hear that, Luke?
No, I heard it.
I love that sound. I'm serious. I'm
telling you.
I love that sound. That is a beautiful sound right there. And you can see, you know, Friday, I kind of get a little melancholy on a Friday. Melancholy.
A melancholy Friday?
Melancholy, only from the standpoint is when I used to play, when I tap into that rage tree, kind of that intensity, man, that's what it was. It was more of a melancholy. You know, this is what I must do. This is what I'm going to do to you. And it was, you know, it was just seriously. At some point in time, I've got to let that go. Would you agree with that?
The calm before the storm. I don't know. I mean, if it's who you are.
Everybody, calm down. Just relax and knock it off. You're fat and 58. You're no longer playing. Don't worry about the melancholy.
We'll see how some of these Friday shows go. And maybe that makes for great radio. I don't know.
Okay. I was angry, though. I was angry earlier in the week.
It's true.
Just the thought of the Arizona Cardinals possibly losing this game. Where do you want to go in this beautiful part of the program?
I want to go to The Ringer, and it was their front page story last night. So this is another example of the Cardinals making people take notice nationally, okay? And it's funny, I told you this before the show. I was just about to go to bed last night. I had done a good amount of show prep, and I looked at The Ringer real quick, and the Cardinals were the front page. And I'm like, well, it's The Ringer. This will be a 30,000-word story. I'm going to be okay. Up until Thanksgiving.
Right.
Very good story by Stephen Ruiz, who was on, actually, with Bickley and Murata this morning. The title of the story is, Are Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury Finally Hitting Their Stride? And it goes through, it tackles a lot of different things with the Cardinals, but the overlying, is that a thing?
Yes.
Overlying thing at the start of the piece is basically they were very impressed by what happened in week one. They were trying to figure out, is this the new Cardinals or was it just an aberration? Was it just a one-week thing? Like, are they seeing legitimate, tangible differences in what the Cardinals are doing, or did they just have a monster performance from Chandler Jones and Kyler Murray?
Of course.
So there's a few different ways we can go with this, but a lot of it focused on Kyler Murray, and it sort of the opposite of what we were looking at yesterday with that Deadspin piece where they were saying, if the Cardinals do well, it's Kyler Murray in spite of Cliff Kingsbury. This looked at the two of them working together.
Can I give you four of my predictions for the Arizona Cardinals offense this year before you actually do that and see if it matches up? Because I didn't read this. Not only the fact it was 30,000 words.
Yeah, you need 6 weeks.
I did not read this. You brought this up in show prep this morning. I still have not seen the article right now. Do you mind if I give you my four and see if it matches up?
Give me the four.
Because here's what I saw in week one. Now, once again, it's week one of the regular season, and one game does not make a church. So the first thing is Kyler Murray under center. That is the first thing right there. This is what I've been talking about the entire offseason. They ran 10 plays, as a matter of fact, with Kyler Murray under center. I believe they ran 69 plays. It was almost 15%, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. 15% of the time, they put Kyler Murray under center in this game. Five of those 10 plays they put him under center actually occurred in the red zone. That isn't a surprise to me. That's not a surprise because that says to me you're going to run the ball. Now, they didn't always run the ball. Of course, they used play action in those five plays in the red zone. But it's the threat of lining up and running the ball, of course. That's why you do it. So Kyler Murray under center would be point number one. Number two would be more tight ends, the use of more tight ends in this offense. That's number two. Number three, the run-pass ratio. The run-pass ratio is going to be something we've never seen before here under Cliff Kingsbury, in the Cliff Kingsbury era. It's going to be more of an even run-pass ratio. And then I would say tempo. The tempo, selective tempo. Those four things, that's what I see this offense evolving into. What did The Ringer say?
Well, that's interesting because I won't say it ignored any of those things, but they weren't necessarily the focal points yet.
So what were they talking? What were they focusing
on? Well, it was funny because they're looking at Kyler Murray, and one of the things they were looking at is is he comfortable enough in the pocket yet?
Mm.
Or does he sort of still default to improvising and making plays? And they, you know, they acknowledged right in there one of the best plays on Sunday was him improvising and throwing that first touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins.
But he didn't have to.
But he didn't have to.
It was a nice pocket, as a matter of fact. I was just looking at it this morning again, watching the tape again. Man, many times there was a nice pocket. And how many times have I said this week, he's got to step up in that pocket. That's the next way for him to improve the most.
It's right. It's funny. They put the all 22 angle in there of that specific play. And so you can watch and you, I mean, yeah, if you haven't gone back and you're into that sort of stuff, go back and look. The pocket's right there. But the thing is, and this, they say this a few times, they're like, evaluating Kyler Murray is especially complicated because traditionally the fundamental play right there, right, is step into the pocket.
Yes.
And make that, and they do show if he had done that, Hopkins probably would have been open for maybe an easier touchdown. But you've got DeAndre Hopkins, you've got Kyler Murray, they made it work anyway.
Yes.
So that's where it's like, that's, it gets difficult to evaluate them.
Kyler does this a lot. He actually bails to the right a lot of the time. And this is something that defensive coordinators now are going to start catching on to. They really are. This is going to be a great game. You hear me talk about Mike Zimmer as the Hydra, the nine-headed Hydra. It's because this guy is going to try to corner with those nine heads. He's going to try to corner Kyler Murray and not let him out of the pocket. He's already admitted, you know what, yeah, we can't keep him in the pocket. That's not going to be able to watch. Mike Zimmer's going to try to keep him in the pocket.
I'm just picturing Mike Zimmer with nine heads. This is Stephen Ruiz, who wrote the story on with Bickley and Murata this morning. They asked him what tends to happen when Kyler improvises.
Yeah, so there were eight dropbacks where he either moved outside the pocket or just moved around and then threw the ball. And on those plays, the Cardinals had bad efficiency. They were, I think it was minus 0.05 EPA, which is expected points added. Zero is completely average. Obviously, you want to have a positive number. On the other dropbacks, he averaged like 0.4 EPA per play, which is basically Patrick Mahomes level, even better than what Mahomes does on a down-to-down basis. So when he stayed within the structure of the offense moved the ball. When he tried to improvise, that's when they ran into trouble. The one thing is, those in-structure plays still required amazing throws. The throws I covered already, and then you have the crossing route to Kirk, where Kirk is stumbling, and Kyler puts exactly where it needs to be. So even that isn't necessarily a promising sign for Cliff Kingsbury's play calling.
So I'm looking at the specific numbers that he put out there. Like, I have them in front of me too, so I can kind of read it out again. And total EPA, like, I don't want to get too deep into numbers here, but it's essentially saying when Kyler sticks to the plan, they're actually much more efficient. And you heard him say it in that clip. I mean, his EPA was like Patrick Mahomes level when he stays in the pocket. But he also does note, and he even says in the piece, like, I'm not trying to bring this back up as like a knock on Kyler Murray with his height, but maybe that makes it tougher for him to feel comfortable in the pocket.
I don't think there's any doubt about that yet. That's where he really can improve. And you could see it, this concerted effort from the Tennessee Titans to try to keep Kyler Murray in the pocket. How many times you went back and looked at the tape and you saw this beautiful pocket in front of Kyler Murray. Sometimes he stepped up and threw the ball. Other times, man, he'd bail, and he's bailing to the right an awful lot. And again, this is what defensive coordinators are going to game plan for. This is why they scheme. This is why they do it. And they're the best in the world, and they'll come up with a plan. And Mike Zimmer is definitely going to have a plan for stopping Kyler Murray. I mean, at some point in time, forget about everybody else. It's just him.
More from Stephen Ruiz on the morning show says both Kyler and Cliff are improving.
So I wanted to figure out, is this offense still relying on his playmaking ability, or has he taken another step as a play caller, and is he making things easier? And the answer is somewhere in the middle. Like, Kyler's still doing all these amazing things, but I think Kyler has also taken a step forward mentally, and that is the reason why the Cardinals offense looks so great on Sunday, rather than Cliff's play calling improving.
So we'll look more at this later in the show, because he does break down the play calling in relation to what we've seen the first 2 years of Kyler and Cliff together.
The play calling, of course, yeah. As soon as you start talking about play calling right there, I honestly look at you like Moisen Ajok did. I'm just telling you right now. Honestly, you know what? You could call any play known to man. If the player is good enough, he's going to go out. He's going to execute the play. And many times executing that play, and I don't know why I can't say execute, because I'm all fired up right now. Many times executing that play, of course, just means being better than the guy across from you. And suddenly you look like a genius. This is unbelievable. The rest of the NFL is running so many offenses that are so similar to everybody else's, yet it's the player. The player that makes a difference.
Well, that's why I think Steven Ruiz probably had such a hard time doing this or trying to evaluate, trying to separate, is this Kyler just his raw talent or is Cliff improving? Because, you know, they came into the league together. And to a certain extent, isn't Cliff going to coach to the player he has? Like, if I'm a coach, okay, I know Kyler can do this. So, yeah, maybe I wouldn't try this with Jared Goff, but I don't have Jared Goff. I have Kyler Murray, so I know I can run this play or I can run my offense this way. Like I said, we'll get deeper into that later on in the show. Text us your thoughts on the Cardinals' offense to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up, just how big would a win against BYU be for ASU? We ask publisher of SunDevilSource.com, Chris Cartman. Next, it's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Wolf and Luke Middays, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
All right, over to college football. Definitely the biggest game in the Pac-12 this weekend is ASU in Provo against BYU, two top 25 teams. And I believe they've now counted all of ASU's votes for ASU. They're not still giving them to U of A. Chris Cartman of SunDevilSource.com joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
Thanks, Chris. When you see this matchup coming up for ASU, I mean, I know it's their first real test of this season, and last season was kind of, it was four games, so it wasn't even really a season. With the experience this team has, how do you think they will be prepared for a game like this?
Well, defensively, they should be ready to go. There were some challenges that they faced with Southern Utah's run game that I think are going to be replicated here. A lot of that flat zone stretch, BYU will really run a defensive line tired, get linebackers headed in the wrong direction. So that could be something of a concern. And then the mobility of Jaren Hall and what he does on the move and with play actions. ASU players have compared him to being a little bit like a Russell Wilson. And obviously he's not nearly on that level and he's just getting started in his career. But I feel like he's more accurate on the move and better beating you with his legs than he is right now from the pocket. So they need to do a good job anchoring against that run game and containing him in the pocket. Much more questions for ASU on the offensive side of the ball, though they do have a bunch of veteran offensive linemen and a talented run game.
And Chris, what do you think is the strength of BYU?
Well, they're veteran, seasoned players who understand what they're doing, work extremely well in unison, very well coached and schemed. They make you extend drives to beat them. They do not turn the football over. They are great on special teams. Their punter is a freshman, but he's outstanding. And so really they force you to play methodical, controlled, and mistake-free football. And that's not easy. They're not one of the more athletic teams that ASU will face. If you put them in the Pac-12, just in terms of their personnel, it wouldn't be in the top half of the league. But as you guys know, they've already beaten two Pac-12 teams and are going for a third, and they're ranked. So they're very good.
The game last week, talking to Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source, the game last week, ASU beat UNLV 37-10. I mean, that's not much of a test. But at halftime, Chris, it was only 14-10, and then the Sun Devils pulled away. Is that, you know, a different opponent each week? Maybe not see 37-10, but is that sort of what we need to get used to with ASU? Early in these games, they may be close, and then just the running game starts to wear the other team down?
Well, Herm Edwards would definitely prefer that not be the case. And he made a point of emphasis on that this week, saying that the slow starts are problematic, in particular when you go on the road to a hostile environment. And Lavelle Edwards Stadium will be among the tougher places that ASU plays this year. They don't have a lot of ranked opponents coming in when they're also ranked historically. I don't think it's happened in over 10 years. So they need to avoid that. You have to get some first downs early. First down, second down success. Don't get yourself behind the chains. Don't have negative plays. Don't take sacks. What happened with BYU is they turned the football over with an interception early in their own side of the field. Then they had a fumble they lost on their side of the field. And all that momentum swung, and the crowd went from already energized to in a frenzy. And Edwards said, look, you got to get a couple first downs to take that punch out of that crowd and give yourself some room to breathe and think and be able to execute.
Do you think the Sun Devils are going to be able to run the ball? Because I think that is so critical to their overall plan offensively, if they're able to run the ball, and in particular between the tackles.
I agree with you, Wolf. And there are going to be those opportunities, right? Because BYU very frequently will only bring three and four guys at the line of scrimmage. ASU's offensive linemen are quite good. The offensive tackles have been great in their run blocking. Donovan West moving into center, I think, is an impact player, and they will do a lot of things, try to manipulate guys to create holes around him in that A-gap. And, of course, Rashad White has this natural ability to make the first guy miss and get a few yards where there really doesn't seem to be a lot of yards. I think it's absolutely one of the most essential elements of this game. But I also would say that they have to try to stretch the line of scrimmage laterally to get the ball to Rashad White in the swing game, to throw run replacements, bubbles on the perimeter, things of that nature, so that they're not just only reliant on trying to take it vertically.
Talking to Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source. Chris, what do you feel about Jaden Daniels so far in year three? Last week, 175 yards passing, but he ran for 125. I assume they don't want him running that much if they can help it.
No, they don't. And this is a really big-time opportunity for him because, as I said, BYU, they'll drop 7-8 into zone coverage. He's going to have to identify who's open, where he can put the ball through windows. There's not going to be the same scramble opportunities that you get in man-covered situations, especially on third downs, the way that they play defense. So he's going to have to be more deliberate. We saw Arizona quarterbacks that are not nearly as good as Jaden Daniels throw for well over 300 yards, but it's mostly underneath-type stuff. And you have to take what's there for you and kind of move the chains. But if he got sacked twice in Southern Utah, both of them were on him when he left a clean pocket. Okay, that was a problem again against UNLV to some degree. He's going to have to repress that sort of instinct, that tendency where he wants to get out and scramble, especially doing so where he's not maintaining the ability to still throw the football. If you're going to extend plays, extend to still keep your eyes down the field and see what's available to you in against these zones, because that's where you get some opportunities. I feel like this is 3 years in, a litmus test for him in a lot of respects going on the road. And whether they win or lose is really going to come down a lot to Jaden Daniels' passing ability in this game.
Chris, I have to ask you this, and we have no time, and it's unfair that I do ask you this. Yet at the same time, I've got to get it off my chest. The state of the program right now as you see it.
Well, it's difficult because they lost their three top recruiters now who are on paid leave, and they absolutely need to win to take any pressure off of Herm Edwards. There's a lot of things that are still going to unfold with the NCAA investigation, and I don't think that the worst of this is over in a lot of respects for them, especially with how recruiting has dropped off in the wake of this and the way that these things can play out over a multi-year period. So the only thing that's really going to help them is if they have a great season. And maybe that puts some pressure on the administration and the local media to advocate on their behalf.
Chris Cartman, great stuff as always,
man. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for the time. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
My pleasure.
All right, okay. Chris Cartman of SunDevilSource.com joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Cadillac Tempe. Experience the difference at Coulter Cadillac Tempe.com. Coming up, After not seeing him much in week one, what can we expect to see from Zaven Collins in week two? It's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Wolf and Luke. Presented by 72 Souls. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Good song.
This is Van Halen.
Oh, yeah.
It's among all the players, when you look at the snap counts from Sunday's game against Tennessee, the guy who at least to me, it stood out, played less than I expected, was Zaven Collins, just because there was so much talk about, hey, this guy's the starter. He was a first-round pick. This guy's going to play. And he didn't play all that much in week one. He got out, it was about 22 snaps, 34%. I mean, he was out there, but he just wasn't out there nearly as much as Jordan Hicks, who was out there 95% of the snaps. But also, just in general, he wasn't out there a ton, Zaven Collins. Vance Joseph did say a lot of that was just the way the game played out.
Just the game plan. You know, every week the game plan is going to change. We thought it was going to be a heavy, heavy, heavy run game, you know, so Zaven was going to play a bunch of snaps. But once we got a three or four, you know, four score lead, it became a nickel game, you know. So he lost probably 20, 25 snaps with it being a three wide receiver personnel game. But it's strictly game plan. You know, it can be different this week and different in week, you know, three or four, you know. But every week who we play and what our guys do best, that's our job to find it out and to put it into our game plan. Last week, it was more for Jordan to be the play caller and Zaven to play more base downs.
Boy, that made so much sense to me when I heard that.
Yeah, right once there. He said it, it did make a lot
it
more sense.
It really did right there. Just the fact that Jordan Hicks, of course, was playing a lot more of the base stuff. And yet at the same time, there's no denying it, Jordan Hicks is a starter. I mean, that's the way I look at him. He's the starter at Mike Backer. Now, does that mean he's going to be the starter at Mike Backer in week two? I have no idea. Does that mean that Zaven Collins is going to be kicked over to the weak side inside? I have no idea what that means, but I do know this. Jordan Hicks played 95% of the snaps, and he had the green dot. That's what I know. Right there. He's starting in some capacity. Whether you want to call him the Mike Backer, the weak side inside, it really doesn't matter. He's starting.
The biggest thing for me, and this sort of just came to mind watching the game on Sunday, but then also when we saw the snap counts on Monday, I know that there was a big deal made of the Cardinals said, hey, Zaven Collins is going to be starting from week one. And that's great. And I'm not saying he can't. Yeah, he did, I guess, technically. But go with what's working. Like, nobody's going to look at you and be like, oh, you're 3-0, but you said Zaven was going to start. Like, who cares?
Yeah, no.
What you did in week one worked.
Absolutely, and not only that, too. I would say to what you just said, Luke, yeah, Zaven Collins can play that weak side inside linebacker, and Isaiah Simmons can play on the outside.
Yeah.
He can play that outside linebacker. We were actually talking to him last night on the Big Red Rage. He prefers that position.
Well,
which stunned me to actually hear him say that, but he says he actually likes playing on the outside linebacker on the line of scrimmage. He likes that.
Yeah, I got it right here.
I don't know. That's hard because, I'd say outside linebacker, you know, because you get the luxury of being able to rush the quarterback as well as, you know, dropping the coverage. And I would say that because I like to get sacks just as much as I like to get interceptions. So
that is well played by you, Isaiah, no doubt about it. That was interesting to me, but it made a lot of sense why Zaven Collins did not play a ton in week one.
With the Simmons thing, I've been pretty firmly in the camp of, even now, he's only going into year two. I don't want to, I know coming out of college, like, oh, this guy could play nine positions. Okay, well, that was in college. This is the NFL. I would like him to focus on one or maybe two.
Amen. Still feel that way.
But there is a fine line to walk of you've got a guy that is a very versatile player. And so if you're sliding him to the outside, allows you to get Jordan Hicks in there, signaling the defense, and it allows you to move Zaven Collins to a position where maybe he's more comfortable in his first couple games in the NFL. Well, let's not be silly here either.
Yeah.
I mean, you have that versatility to work with.
Let's see. Play him, develop him, and win at the same time.
That's
how about that?
Pretty good combination, huh?
That seems a little way to go right there. I'm all on board with that one right there, but it makes so much sense because it's so true. Zaven Collins got the start was starting, and here comes Derrick Henry. They're going to pound it. They're going to pound it. They're going to attack it. They're going to attack it. They're going to, you know what? They got down in that game. And now all of a sudden you're going with a lot of nickel looks. That's the reason why Zaven Collins and his snap counts went down. That makes total sense to me.
Vance Joseph said, too, in the offseason, like, yeah, you guys can make a big deal out of who was drafted where, who's supposed to be the starter, and who's a rookie and who's a vet. But at the end of the day, I'm going to play the 11 guys that give me the best chance to win on any given week. And with the way that game switched and we knew Tennessee had to throw more and you had to be in nickel coverage more and all that stuff opened up, Jordan Hicks should have been out there as much as he was. Obviously, he won by 25.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And not only that, too, you risk, if you don't play the best players on Sunday, if you don't play them, I'm telling you right now, mutiny is what you can expect.
Well, yeah, players know.
Players, are you kidding me? They know, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. Listen, you want me to go out there and give you everything I got? You want me to prepare all week long like the pro that I am? You want me to go out and play and give all that I have, and you're not doing it? Yeah, that's bad.
More from Vance Joseph. He was asked if the person in charge of signaling the defense might be something that changes from week to week.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you're allowed to have three guys with the dots, right, in a row. So, you know, every week is going to change as far as what packages you have up for the game. So we'll see. You know, and again, right now, Zaven's playing really well in his role. He played really well last week. Hicksy played well. Isaiah played well. So right now, we're trying to figure out who we are as a defense and what we do best. And every week right now, it may change until we find out, you know, what we do absolutely best.
That sounded like a lot of do your job, and everybody did their job in week one.
That's beautiful right there. Let's see. Everyone played. Everyone played well, and you won. Oh boy, that is really a good remedy. Once again, that you want to fix things, you want to go on and actually have a very productive season, play like that. Do that. Do everything that Vance Joseph just said right there. That's what it's all about. That's what matters going forward. And listen, we'll see how these reps are distributed from this point forward, but I watched Zaven Collins play, and Zaven Collins played well. Now, I don't know from a mental perspective. I don't know if all the plays were clean for Zaven Collins. I just know I liked what I saw on him.
It's his first game. It's not like he had to play 90% of the snaps. Otherwise, there's something wrong with him. Some guys don't play at all in their first game. Isaiah Simmons barely played at all most of last year.
Yes.
And, again, it's just one game, but he looked pretty good so far in year two. The way week one went for the Cardinals, even as you start to dig deeper, layer after layer, and go deeper and deeper into the details and all these little things of snap counts and all that, it went about as well as it could have gone. So now, I mean, realistically, they may go out there and beat Minnesota, but maybe everything doesn't go quite as well. Maybe they beat Minnesota, but Zaven Collins looks like a rookie, or Isaiah Simmons doesn't look as dominant as he did in week one or whatever. You know what I mean? But you can still win games. Like, they have given themselves, if they play the way they played on Sunday, they're going to win a lot of games.
One of the things I was worried about most for this defense, not only the cornerback room, of course, that was a concern. Boy, man, the cornerback room, I didn't mean to talk about this, but man, they played so well. You go and look at the tape. Again, Marco Wilson, you are a stud. That young dude played so well, and Byron Murphy, of course, Robert Alford, they played well. Now, you worry about depth, there's no denying that, but I got to get that off my chest. They played so well, I was surprised. I was shocked.
Well, that's sort of what I'm saying. I mean, if Marco Wilson takes a step back in week two and looks like a rookie, you gave yourself, you played with such a buffer the way you played in week one that Wilson could take a step back in week two and you might still win.
Right.
But if he doesn't take a step back in week two, if you have a repeat performance where your rookies look like they're already ready and everybody fits together and you start 2-0, I mean...
But what I like is you've got a personnel package where you can have all three of those young linebackers, well, all three of those players on the field, Jordan Hicks, Zaven Collins, and Isaiah Simmons, all three in rundown situations against power personnel groups. You can have all three on the field at the same time. That's what I love. That's what has encouraged me. It's the reason why Zaven Collins will continue to start.
Coming up, we're about 48, 49 hours away from kickoff week two. First home game at State Farm Stadium with a big crowd in a while, in basically 2 years. So what is the biggest question that Wolf has when week two starts? That's next. It's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.